The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio, or its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Draw me close to you. Never let me go. Lay it all down again. To hear you say that I'm a friend. You are my desire. No one else will do. No one else will do.
Good evening. The Almighty Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. If you die as an unbeliever, your spirit will live for a very long time as a disembodied ancestor spirit or demon. The Creator has said regarding unbelievers, "Why would I want someone to spend eternity with me when they do not believe I exist?" So if you don't believe and you think you're going to go somewhere nice when you die, you need to rethink that. If you die as a believer without any form of relationship with the Creator, you will end up in the outer darkness, a cold, black, terrible place with weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, the trash heap of heaven. Father has said concerning such believers, "Why would I want someone to be close to me in heaven, which inherently means I will give them great prestige and authority, if they do not have a deep personal relationship with me and have not proven to me that they can be trusted in this life?" So if you're a nominal believer and you're doing nothing about your relationship with Father and you think something pleasant will happen when you die, excuse me, you need to think again. On the other hand, if you make a real effort to seek relationship with the Almighty, the rewards in the life to come are huge. A glorious resurrected body, great prestige, great authority, and a permanent close relationship with the Creator and with Yeshua, who you may know as Jesus. The Almighty has said, "I created human beings, this planet and this universe, for men and women to be my friends, my companions, to explore and learn and develop together. My greatest grief is that almost no person understands this, let alone seeks such a relationship with me." Today we're going to discuss or continue the discussion on who is Yeshua. You may know him as Jesus. His true name is Yeshua. It's an insult to call him Jesus. Overview of today's program. This broadcast examines the question, who is Yeshua, and continues the discussion of how Yeshua accomplished what he accomplished. It is noted that he was born of a virgin, so there are no bloodline curses. He became king because men with authority proclaimed him king. He became the offering for sin because he declared it. He became the offering for atonement because his blood fell on the mercy seat. His name means Yah is salvation, so there is no higher name. He ushered in a new priesthood because the high priest laid hands on him and declared accordingly. We have authority in his name because he gave it to us. He showed us how to live life led by the Spirit of Yah and petitioned for us to be given the Spirit. It is noted that we should thank Yah that the Jews killed Jesus. It is recommended to pray, "Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing." And it is mentioned that as he died, Yeshua cried out, "My darling, why have you forsaken me?" Finally, we examine some questions relating to your relationship with the Almighty Creator. By way of introduction, who am I? James Robertson. I have a doctorate in engineering and I'm a strategic management consultant. have 27 years' experience of actively seeking to draw close to the Almighty. Following a dramatic encounter with him on the 12th of March 1993, when he spoke to me audibly in a locked room, and I knew for certain that he was real. I was confirmed in the Anglican Church at the age of 13 and served as an altar boy for a number of years from the age of 19. Eventually, married to an unbeliever, I became disenchanted with the hypocrisy of the church and backslid to a point where I was not even sure the Almighty existed. In this backslidden state, I embarked on an adulterous affair, which when it ended, left me desperate and suicidal. It was then that the Almighty spoke to me, and I realized that my intellect had gotten me into a right mess and chose to serve him faithfully for the rest of my life. In doing this, I applied my deep-seated aversion to failure, born out of an accident in early childhood, coupled to my engineering training of rigor and preventing failure, to my seeking of knowledge about Father. This journey led to numerous supernatural experiences, prayers answered, and clear communication with the Creator that forms the basis for what I teach in these programs. What is End Time Issue Ministries? It's the organizational vehicle for delivering my message through email articles, websites, this radio program, and physical books. What is this program? The Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. It represents the essence of my message. See the website www.endtimeissueministries.org for more information. That's www.endtimeissueministries.org. See also www.relationshipwithcreatorradio.com, the show and podcasts for previous broadcasts. Questions from last week's program. When he puts such tests to us, why would we want to be friends with him? I'm not totally sure what that question relates to. I'm thinking that it relates to what Yeshua went through. And I think it's important to understand we do not have to go through the sort of things that Yeshua went through in order to become friends of Yah. I've certainly never been through anything like that. That was not really a test. For Yeshua, it was a negotiated deal. Something pretty terrible had to be done in order to regain authority from Satan. And so Yeshua came to earth knowing what he was in for and willingly and consciously and deliberately set himself up for the death that he died. Certainly not necessary for you to go through something like that. How do we know if we reach full potential? If you get to the top of the mountain, I think you'll know about it. You get to a place where Father talks to you and he'll tell you that you're getting there. How did that work out for him? I'm guessing again that that relates to Yeshua. Well, Yeshua ended up as the most powerful created being in the universe. So I think it worked out quite well for him. So going back to who is Yeshua, just as a precy, during the creation, the Almighty created a spirit being to help him. The spirit being assisted the Almighty in all sorts of ways and was very close to the Almighty. After Satan rebelled and was cast out to earth, the Almighty and the spirit being agreed that the spirit being would be placed in the body of a human being to live a life free of sin, die a terrible death, to fulfill prescribed rites for forgiveness, and if successful in living life free of sin and dying without sinning, he would become king of all human kings and rule in heaven alongside the Almighty Creator for eternity. When he came to earth, he was born of a virgin and was named Yahushua, meaning Yah is salvation. You may incorrectly know him as Jesus or Joshua. This broadcast will discuss in detail who he really is and how he accomplished what he accomplished. So returning to our discussion of last week, how did Yeshua accomplish what he accomplished? Well, part of it is that he was firstborn of, and is, firstborn of creation. So he was the first being that Yah created. He was Yah's executive assistant and messenger throughout the creation. So he knew what to expect when he came to earth. When Father Yah, the eternally self-existing creator of the heavens and earth, commenced with the creation. The first spirit being he created was the spirit being that eventually came to earth in the body of the man we know as Yahushua, incorrectly Jesus. In this capacity, he assisted Yah as an executive assistant and messenger, and at times came to earth as the messenger of Yah, captain of the host, and in other capacities. As a consequence, when he arrived on earth in the body of a human being, he knew what to expect. He knew Satan's devices, and he knew Yah's way of doing things and Yah's plans. Thus, Yahushua, the son of Adam, or in other words, son of man, was exceptionally well informed and well equipped for what he was called to do. So it's important to understand that Yahushua did have an advantage. He did come to earth knowing what he was coming for and understanding the terrible death that he was going to die. In fact, if you understand his behavior, he spent 3.5 years provoking the high priests and the scribes and the Pharisees so that they would call for his death. He went into the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and let the animals free. He rebuked the high priests and the Pharisees, etc. He broke a lot of their man-made rules. All of that was A, to bring correction, but B, to provoke them to such an extent that they came to hate him so much that they put him to that terrible death. He also fully knew what to expect and how he was to die, and why it was necessary that he go through all that he had to go through. He did this by choice, knowing full well what the reward would be if he succeeded and the penalty if he failed. It is vital to understand that he chose to go through all he went through voluntarily in exchange for the promise of becoming king of all human kings and lord of all human lords and sitting at the right hand of the Father for eternity. People get so mixed up about Yahushua. There's a large body of people who think it was wrong that he was put to death and hold people responsible for that and hate the Jews because they put Yahushua to death, ignoring the fact that Yahushua was a Jew and his disciples, his followers were Jews. Because people don't understand the context of what happened to him. And this is one of the drawbacks of the Bible. The Bible just reports facts about what observers who didn't understand what was going on saw. It gives you no interpretation, no explanation of the sort of things that I'm sharing with you now, which are absolutely vital to seeing Yeshua's life and death in its proper context. So how did he accomplish that which he accomplished? He was born of a virgin, a son of Adam, a human being, which meant that he had authority on earth and also that he had no bloodline curses. In being conceived by a creative miracle in the fallopian tubes of a virgin, the being that became Yahushua was fully human, save for the absence of a male father. This miracle is minor compared to the miracle of the creation of Adam from dust and the creation of Eve, Chava, from a rib of Adam. This miracle does not in any way make Yahushua in some way more special than Adam, and therefore does not in any way make Yahushua more special than you or I. As such, it is entirely false to infer some sort of sexually transmitted paternity that in some strange way makes Yahushua divine. Such thinking is a pagan abomination. Folks, this is so, so important. Miriam, who you probably know as Mary, was about 13 years old when she conceived Yeshua. She was a pure virgin. It's nothing more miraculous than that. She was a special young lady. The creation of Yeshua was no more miraculous than the creation of Adam, and it's so important to understand that. So much wrong thinking ascribes some form of divinity to Yeshua because he was created without a human father and created by the Almighty. If we're to follow the logic, we must impute greater divinity to Adam and therefore to the entire human race. It is therefore patently false to assign divinity to Yeshua on the basis of his conception. But by being born as a son of a human being, and therefore a son of Adam, Yeshua had the right to redeem the authority that Adam gave to Satan when he submitted to Satan in response to Satan's lies to Chava, Eve. And this in turn put Yeshua in a position to redeem mankind by living a sinless life and regain authority for the sons of Adam. Note that Yah gave authority on Adam, on earth to Adam, and told him to have dominion over all things on earth, including Satan. In this, Yeshua had exactly the same opportunity that had existed for every son of Adam before him, with the exception that he had better knowledge of his enemy, and that because he was born of a virgin, he was free of bloodline curses which passed down the male bloodline. Folks, nobody who is not a living human being has any authority whatsoever on earth. So these stories about angels, messengers, giants conceived by messengers, angels with women, reptilians, and on and on these strange stories go, they're meaningless. Those beings, if they existed, which they don't, would have absolutely no authority on earth. They couldn't do anything. So Yeshua became king because men with authority proclaimed him king. Yeshua became king simply because Herod and Pontius Pilate, respectively of the king of the Yehudites or Jews and the Roman governor in office on behalf of the Roman emperor, declared him king, even as did many others, albeit that they thought they were mocking him. The placards above the stake, the cross, which said, "The King of the Jews," were sufficient to make him king. So again, it's not because he was divine, it's not because he was God in the flesh, both of which are just not true. It's because human beings declared him to be king. And that made him king. They didn't mean to make him king. Like so many people today, they didn't know the impact of their words. They thought they could just insult him and call him the King of the Jews and beat him and put a crown of thorns on his head and say, "Hail, King." But they made him king. Nothing more miraculous than that. The key thing that I'm trying to get across to you today is that there is, barring the miracle of living free of sin and the miracle of his conception, the rest of Yeshua's life is absolutely routine and not miraculous. And he's certainly not Yah in the flesh. It was the Spirit of Yah on him, as we discussed previously, that enabled him to perform miracles and to prophesy, etc. So Yeshua became the offering for sin because he was declared the Lamb of Yah, and he declared the bread and wine as representative tokens of his body and blood, and therefore of the sin and other offerings. Yeshua became the offering for sin, simply because Yehuchanan, John, meaning Yah has graced, declared Yahushua to be the Lamb of Yah at the time that Yahushua was immersed by Yehuchanan. And because Yahushua assigned the bread and wine to represent his body and blood at his last meal with those who followed him, the entire reassignment of representation is simply a matter of authoritative statement. Yeshua as a member of the Levitical priesthood, Yahuchanan, as a member of the Levitical priesthood, had the authority to proclaim Yeshua to be the Lamb. And Yeshua had the authority to proclaim that his body and blood would henceforth be represented by the bread and wine. This was vital to enable us to overcome in this age, after the Levitical priesthood fell away totally after the destruction of Jerusalem. And it was necessary even before that, because the Ark of the Covenant had gone missing when Babylon invaded Jerusalem, so they could not induct a new high priest. They could not make a final offering for sin. We have the Day of Atonement coming up on Monday, and one part of that ritual was that the high priest would put the blood of the offering on the mercy seat of the Ark of Covenant on the Day of Atonement. After the Ark went missing, that wasn't possible. So Yeshua, when he died and his blood ran down onto the Ark, ushered in a new priesthood. So he became the offering for atonement because he was sent outside the city walls and his blood fell on the mercy seat of the Ark, the container of the covenant. By laying hands on Yeshua, the high priests and people transferred their sins onto Yeshua as the scapegoat and then sent him outside the city walls. In addition, as discovered recently by Ron Wyatt, someone, probably Jeremiah, meaning whom Yah has appointed, hid the Ark, the container of the covenant, in a cave under a hill known as Skull Hill, Golgotha, outside the city walls and reached by a tunnel from underneath the Temple Mount at the time of the Babylonian invasion in about 597 before Yeshua. So Yeshua knew exactly where and how he had to die. In 1982, Ron Wyatt found the Ark of the Covenant directly under that execution site, which exactly fits that described in the historical accounts known as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and found an earthquake crack through the central stake or crosshole in the rock, and found human blood without the male chromosome that had run down the earthquake crack onto the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And that's how Yeshua became the high priest. That's how he became the atoning offering sacrifice for sin. His blood was sprinkled on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And that hadn't been possible for 597 years before that, and it was never possible again. Well, it could have been done, I guess, after 1982, but Ron Wyatt is the only person who has touched the Ark of the Covenant since then and lived, and he died a few years ago. So that's Yeshua ushered in a new dispensation. He had to. Thus, the offering required for atonement of sin and also the offering required for the induction of a new high priest were made moments after the soldier pierced Yeshua's side with a spear and water and blood ran down the earthquake crack onto the mercy seat. The precision of Yah's planning is amazing. From this, it is entirely certain that Yeshua knew exactly how and where he would die before he came to earth. So think about this. The cave had to be positioned under a site that could be used as an execution site. The execution site had to be created directly above the cave. The Ark of the Covenant had to be moved into that particular cave when there were lots and lots of other caves. then Yeshua had to die on a stake exactly above the Ark of the Covenant. We're talking about a case of about a meter by a meter, so the very exact location of the stake. Then Yeshua had to die, and his side had to be pierced by the soldiers so that his blood would run out with mixed with water. And then there had to be an earthquake crack that precisely fractured the rock from the foot of the stake hole, the cross hole, down to exactly over the top of the Ark of the Covenant so that the blood could run down. It's an amazingly precise set of circumstances, which if you understand them, gives you a whole new perspective on Yeshua's death. Continuing, Yeshua's name means Yah is salvation, and there is no name higher than this. The man most people know as Jesus was never known that way. His name was Yeshua, meaning Yah is salvation. He was a Hebrew, not a Greek. Since there's nothing higher than the salvation of Yah, it is apparent that Yeshua is the name above all names, barring Yah, of course. Note that if in a crisis or emergency, all you can utter is Yahushua, you're effectively crying out, Yah, save me. A young friend of mine recently sent me a text saying he'd been attacked by demons and he'd been battling to speak. And I said to him, just say in your heart, Yahushua, 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 and you'll find after a I've been in that position where demons have choked me and I couldn't speak. And you just say, Yeshua, Yeshua, and then you croak out, Yeshua, Yeshua. And eventually you're able to declare it loudly and then the demons go away and leave you alone. If I once had a situation where I was driving too fast on a winding road and it was wet and there was mud on the road and my car slid over the side and I called out as I went over. And the angels grasped the car and gently lowered it at the foot of the slope instead of it rolling down into the forest. It's powerful, folks, but it's legal stuff because of what he did. There's no magic. It's legal. You call Yah, Yahushua. Yah is obliged to save you. Yeshua issued in a new priesthood because the high priest laid hands on him and declared him Messiah mockingly, and because his blood, the blood of the offering, fell on the mercy seat. As I've just indicated, Yeshua ushered in a new priesthood because the high priest laid hands on him and proclaimed him Messiah, anointed one, and because the blood of the offering was placed on the mercy seat. And what happened there was the Jews were expecting this king, priest, that they called Messiah, to come and rescue them. And Yeshua came and did things that they didn't expect because they didn't understand. Just like people don't understand today. Most people don't understand Yeshua today. That's why they worship him. That's why there's so much confusion, why there's so much sin. So important, folks. He didn't become high priest because of some magic or some divinity. He became high priest because the high priest laid hands on him and declared him to be high priest, just like the emperor and the king declared him to be king. There's no magic here, folks. It's all strict spiritual legal stuff. And it's so important to understand that the spirit realm is strictly legal. It strictly works according to the book. It strictly works according to the words you speak or that are spoken. Then we as believers, as anointed believers, And let me qualify that. Anointed believers who are reasonably free of sin have authority in his name because he gave it to us. Because of his life and death, all authority in heaven and on earth was given to Yeshua. We have authority in his name because he commanded those who followed him to be his emissaries, representatives, and to go in his name. He delegated his authority to them and to all who follow him, therefore to us. When I say us, those who are anointed believers who are reasonably free of sin. Thus, whenever we use his name, we do so as his representatives, as his emissaries, his sent ones, and in his authority. Again, important to understand that because of Adam's sin, Yeshua had no authority on earth over the realms of darkness until such time as he was inducted in the way he was inducted. Yes, he had authority to call out demons because he was operating under the Spirit of the Almighty and he was free of sin. And that's also important to understand. Yeshua was an Old Testament prophet, as I said last week. Everything he did was based on his authority before he died, not the new dispensation that he ushered in after he died. And people get all confused about that too. Yeshua was a Jew. He was a Hebrew, not some mystical being. He was a common or garden believer in his age. Now he is seated at the right hand of the Father, waiting until his enemies are made his footstool. He will do nothing now until we prepare for him and take authority on his behalf. And if no human being is ready for Yeshua to return in about 3003, which will be 7,000 years from creation, then Satan will be victorious on earth, because Yeshua will have been betrayed by those he came to save. One way to hand over dominion on earth to Satan is to worship Yeshua as deity and thereby break the first and greatest commandment. And Satan is having a field day. He's laughing. Most believers are worshiping Jesus. They've got the wrong name and they're worshiping the wrong entity. It's important to understand there are at least five or six verses in the Bible which tell us that Yeshua is seated at the right hand of the Father, waiting until his enemies are made his footstool. Please get the bit about made. We have to make his enemies Yeshua's footstool. He's not going to do it. He's not going to come back and do it. He's not going to come back unless we do it. We've got 983 years, roughly, to get the job done. So we need to bind and cast out demons and satanic messengers, angels. We need to start speaking truth. We need to stop promulgating lies as law. We need to stop abortion. We need to stop worshiping Jesus. We need to stop calling Yah, God, and the Lord. We need to stop calling Yeshua Jesus. We need to observe the Saturday Sabbath, and so on and so forth. Yeshua showed us how to live life led by the Spirit of Yah and petitioned for us to be given the Spirit without the intervention of other humans. From the time the Spirit of Yah came upon him, Yeshua, following immersion, you might call it baptism, by Yehuchanan the Immerser, John the Baptist, Yeshua was filled with the Spirit of Yah and demonstrated to us what is possible when we are so filled. Furthermore, he petitioned that the set-apart Spirit, the Holy Spirit, which is simply the Spirit of the Almighty in a special measure for a committed believer, would be given to all who asked for it in the name of Yeshua, so that we are no longer reliant on the laying on of hands or other ministry by other humans to receive this gift. Folks, it's so important to understand that in this age, the number of true believers, true spirit-filled, anointed believers walking in truth is extremely small. It's also important to understand that anybody, anywhere on the planet, without the intervention of any human being, can come to a relationship with Father. Father will meet them where they are and teach them if they're willing to be taught. Not easy. Doesn't happen much. But there are isolated all over the planet believers coming from all sorts of different backgrounds, all sorts of different religions, all sorts of different faiths. And they have to be able to grow without other humans to help them. All of this was done in order to make a way for any and all human beings to live life in service to the Creator, irrespective of the spiritual state of other human beings. Prior to the death of Yeshua, we were dependent on there being others who had gone before as priests or prophets to induct us. After the death of Yeshua, this is no longer necessary. Yeshua died a terrible death so that we would not have to spend time in hell suffering torment for our unrepented sins. We will be judged in terms of the way he suffered and will suffer torment if, having accepted Yeshua's gift, we treat it lightly or make a mockery of it. Folks, if you don't understand that when you die as a believer, you will go to the throne of judgment and your life will play out in front of you and all your unconfessed, unrepented sin will be catalogued and chronicled and listed, and you will then be sentenced to time in torment in hell proportionate to each of your unrepented sins. You could spend a period of time roughly equal to your lifespan being tormented if you've sinned throughout your life and never repented. On the other hand, if you avail yourself of Yeshua's sacrifice and you say, Father, I confess that I've done this wrong, I've done that wrong, I've done the following wrong, and in detail you repent and confess and ask for forgiveness, you will be forgiven and you'll go straight to heaven. You don't have to go to hell. So important to realize that. It's not difficult to repent other than the psychological pride issue of perhaps having to go back and restore stuff you've stolen or tell people you lied to them and so forth. Note that it is a grave offense to make out that Yeshua is the Almighty in disguise or part of a Godhead or a Trinity, because it denies the full magnitude of what Yeshua achieved as a man. This is sin in addition to the sin of worshipping a man as the Almighty, which breaks the greatest commandment. Yah, the eternally self-existing, is one mighty one, and you shall have no other mighty ones beside him. In my capacity as an emissary, apostle, and spokesman, prophet of Yah, the eternally self-existing, I urge you not to worship Yeshua or regard him as deity or part of a pagan trinity, but to esteem him greatly as an emissary, a sent one, an apostle and prophet, one through whom the Almighty speaks, a spokesman, a man who achieved great things in his life and gave us an example. That is, he showed us the way for us to do likewise. For this reason, we can aspire to do greater works than he did. He said to us, when he was speaking to his followers, you can do, I have to go to my Father so that you can do greater works than I did. It's totally possible for us to do greater works, but you have to understand that he is a human being. He is a signpost. He is a role model, but you can go further. On a slightly different tack, Thank Yah that the Jews killed Jesus. There are a significant number of people who use the fact that the Jews killed Jesus in the Bible to justify hatred of the Jews. This drove World War II. Jew is simply a modern English variant of the word Yahudite, meaning person of Yahudah, Judea, the name of the region in Israel, Yisrael, where Yahushua lived. It's also the name of a particular family or tribe, the tribe of Yahudah, Judah. Thus, Jesus, Yeshua, was also a Jew, a Yahudite. It was necessary for the Yahudites, the Jews, to kill Yeshua, Jesus, in order that his blood came upon them, and for other prophetic acts to happen that allowed the Passover sacrifice of a lamb to be substituted by a man without sin, who thereby gained authority and provided a way for us to serve Yah as individuals. And we've gone through all of that in a lot of detail this broadcast. If the Yehudites had not killed Yeshua, we would have a massive problem as believers today. In fact, the believers might well have been totally obliterated. We should therefore be thankful that the Yehudites killed Yeshua. It was, after all, Yah's plan, with which Yeshua was in full accord. Folks, there is so much Bible-driven wrong thinking because people don't understand, and the Bible is so superficial. It reports things with no understanding, no explanation of what was going on in the background, such as I've given you in the last half hour. If you don't understand the things that I've explained to you tonight, you're not going to understand Yeshua. One of the things that Yeshua evidenced was forgiveness on the stake before he died. Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing. It's a very important prayer, and it's a principle that we should keep in mind. And then, just as he was dying, my darling, why have you forsaken me? As he died, Yeshua cried out, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which is typically translated as my God, why have you forsaken me? This would be more accurately translated as my darling mighty one, my darling mighty one, why have you forsaken me? The Hebrew word Eli has a much deeper connotation than mighty one. It is a term of deep affection, endearment, and love that evidences the sort of relationship that the Almighty Creator desires to have with each one of us. Note that Yah had to withdraw his spirit from Yeshua, otherwise Yeshua could not die. So Yeshua could have hung on that stake for another day in agony, but Father chose to let him die fairly quickly. But Father had to withdraw his spirit from Yeshua before he could die. Horrible for both of them, traumatic as anything for Yeshua, and he still managed to hang in there and not sin. Say what I've said before. The greatest miracle of Yeshua is that he lived and died without sinning even once. So that's the end of my message for today. I want to cycle around and ask you, what is the state of your relationship with the Almighty Creator? I would like to ask you to critically examine where you are relative to the Creator today. Do you talk to him constantly throughout the day and allow him to lead you in every possible way? Are you conscious of him at all times? Do you worship him at every opportunity? Do you count him your friend? Have you clearly and unambiguously heard him call you friend? If not, you are failing in your life purpose and will be bitterly disappointed when you die. Folks, I can't stress this enough. There's only one reason this whole universe exists, and that is for human beings to become friends of the Almighty. I don't care who you are, whether you're an important person or a person who thinks of themselves as not important, whether you are whatever race or color or creed or nationality or religion or wealthy or poor or intelligent, educated or not educated. Father wants you to become his friend. He'll meet you wherever you are. Look at the article, Seven Components of Drawing Close, and that'll give you details. About a year and a half ago, I gave 11 messages in sequence on that topic. They're on the website. They're also on the Relationship with Creator Radio website. So five key documents and a video, main menu web pages on the website. The video at the top of the menu, why seek relationship most important. This is the most important message I'd ever created. I urge you to go there and watch that video. It's on YouTube. There are a number of supporting videos on YouTube as well. Then articles, ebooks on the website, on the main menu. The Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. Seven components in drawing close to the Creator. Recommended worship. The Creator's name is Yah, the eternally self-existing. Where will you spend eternity? All available at www.endtimeishaministries.org. Transcripts of nearly all teachings in this series are available on the website at the bottom on the radio page. Recordings of nearly all of the teachings broadcast so far are available on the radio page, and they're all available at www.relationshipwithcreatorradio.com. Click on the show in the top menu and then select podcasts on the drop-down. Books constituting a compilation of most writings published since 1998 are available at the bottom of the menu at the compilation of most writings page and are physically available. I publish regular email articles. Email me at james@endtimeishaministries.org to be added to the list or to seek counsel or prayer or give me feedback. Visit the website and use the Google search, article keyword cloud, table of contents, and article search to locate the information you're looking for. The Google search is in the top bar of the website. It's also one or two screen pages down in the right-hand sidebar, which that one is a little bit easier to use. In closing, thank you for listening. Please send me your questions on the W4CY webpage. I will answer them next broadcast. Please email me to join the mailing list at james@endtimeishaministries.org. If you decide to draw close to the Almighty, please let me know, and we can connect by Skype, Zoom, email, or telephone so that I can help you with your journey. I hope to connect with you again next week when we will continue to explore how to become a friend of the Creator. Work with me to make a way for Yeshua to return in victory at the end of the millennium and make his enemies his footstool. So important, folks. People have been saying for decades, Jesus is coming soon. He's not coming soon. He might, perhaps, return in 3003. We need to make a way for him to return. We need to make his enemies his footstool. We need to learn to live above sin without sin. And we need to take authority over the kingdom of darkness. You can help to do that. You can earn a high throne. I urge you to do that. Good night. Father, I